All right, let's dive into a Virginia property law case that's going to make you think twice about every word in your next deed. We're talking Hoover v. Smith, and it's a real eye-opener. Shows how those little details in legal language, they can have huge consequences, especially with property ownership and inheritance. You know, you're putting together a presentation on common property disputes. Need a good example, right? Well, this case is perfect. It's like something out of the news. Imagine inheriting property, and then bam, you find out a tiny wording error cost you a fortune. That's what happened in Hoover v. Smith.
You know what's really interesting about this case? It really shakes things up, throws a wrench into what a lot of people think is standard practice, especially in Virginia, really shows how important it is to get that specific legal language right, even if it seems to go against what we assume from common law.
Okay, so let's get into it. What actually happened in this case?
So it all starts with a deed from 1928. This deed, it conveyed land to Ad and Bessie Shoemaker. They were a married couple. And the deed says they hold the land as joint tenants and not as tenants in common. Seems pretty straightforward, right?
Yeah, joint tenants. I feel like I've heard that before. It basically means they own the property together, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, that's the general idea. But here's the thing. The details matter, especially in Virginia. To really understand what's going on here, we need to look at the legal difference between joint tenancy and tenancy in common. And specifically, this idea of right of survivorship.
All right, break it down for us. What's the difference and why does it matter so much in this case?
Okay, so in a joint tenancy, when one of the owners dies, their share automatically goes to the other owner, the survivor. That's what right of survivorship means. But with a tenancy in common, it's different. There's no automatic transfer. So when one owner dies, their share becomes part of their estate. It goes through a will or maybe intestacy laws. So in Hoover v. Smith, if Ad and Bessie were joint tenants, Bessie would have owned the whole property after Ad died. But if they were tenants in common, she'd only own half and Ad's heirs would get the other half. Which is why they sued, by the way.
Hold on. So if they weren't joint tenants, does that automatically mean they were tenants in common? Is that how the law works in Virginia?
Now that's where things get interesting. You see, Virginia code actually leans towards tenancy in common as the default. Wow. Unless, and this is important, unless there's a really clear intention for a right of survivorship. Virginia code sections 5520 and 5521 lay it all out. They require what they call manifest intent for survivorship to create a joint tenancy.
Manifest intent. Sounds pretty serious.
It is. Virginia's stricter than common law on this point. It's not enough to just say joint tenants. You need language that's super clear, leaves absolutely no doubt about the right of survivorship.
So, back to the Shoemakers. Their deed specifically said as joint tenants, ND, not as tenants in common. I mean, that seems pretty clear to me, like they were being thorough.
You'd think so, right. But here's the twist. The Virginia Supreme Court said, nope, that's not enough. They basically ruled that just using the phrase joint tenants, even when you explicitly say it's not a tenancy in common, still wasn't enough to guarantee those survivorship rights in Virginia. They really zeroed in on that word manifest, meaning it had to be completely unmistakable, no room for interpretation.
Wait, so even though the deed said not tenants in common, it still wasn't enough? That seems kind of counterintuitive. So what kind of language would have satisfied this manifest standard?
Yeah, that's the million-dollar question. And luckily, the court actually gave us some examples. They said you could use phrases like, with right of survivorship, or to survive to the remaining tenant. Those phrases, they said, make it totally clear that the property should go directly to the surviving joint tenant.
Wow, so you're saying that even though the deed rejected tenancy in common, the Hoovers still won their case because it didn't use the exact phrases that the Virginia court was looking for. This really shows how important it is to choose the right words in legal documents. Every single word can make a difference, especially when it comes to property law.
You got it. This case is like a warning sign. We can't just rely on common assumptions or general language. We have to use specific language that lines up perfectly with the state laws. Otherwise, we're setting our clients up for potential problems down the road.
So we're back, and I'm still thinking about those seemingly small wording choices in Hoover v. Smith. Who knew they could cause such a big legal mess? Really makes you realize how every little phrase in a deed can matter.
It really does. It's a great lesson in just how important precision is in legal drafting, especially with property law. You can't be vague or rely on assumptions.
You know, it's like a cautionary tale for lawyers who draft deeds in Virginia.
Absolutely. It highlights that you need to go beyond just common law and use language that really fits with Virginia's requirements. Remember, the court said, joint tenants isn't enough.
Right, right. Okay, so let's think about our listener who's working on that presentation. What are the big takeaways from Hoover v. Smith that they should focus on?
Well, the biggest one is to always, and I mean always, clearly state right of survivorship in the deed. You can't leave any room for doubt. And second, ditch those old common law phrases. They might not hold up in Virginia.
Makes sense. Anything else?
Oh, yeah. One more. Use those magic words that the court specifically said were enough to establish survivorship. Remember the examples. Phrases like, with right of survivorship, or to survive to the remaining tenant. Those are your go-to in Virginia.
So basically, it's a better safe than sorry approach.
Exactly. It's like preventative medicine for legal issues. Using clear and straightforward language is the best way to avoid problems and lawsuits later on.
Speaking of potential problems, let's talk about something else for a minute, something that's been on my mind. The recording statute and title insurance. We mentioned them before, but I think they're worth another look.
Yeah, good point. They're important, but often overlooked. The recording statute basically sets the rules for how we document property interests and make them public. And title insurance, well, that's there to protect buyers and lenders from any hidden problems with the title.
Okay, help me out here. If the original deed in Hoover v. Smith had problems, wouldn't the title insurance have caught that when the later owners got it? Does this mean title insurance isn't as reliable as we think?
That's a really sharp question. And it points out something crucial. Title insurance is important, yeah, but it's not a guarantee that nothing will go wrong. Title insurance companies, they look at the chain of title based on what's been recorded. But if a deed has unclear language, like we saw in Hoover v. Smith, the title company might not see it as a problem, especially if the property has changed hands a bunch of times since that first deed.
So even with title insurance, there's still a chance that a hidden problem in a deed could come back and cause trouble later on. Hoover v. Smith really shows why getting that initial deed right is so important.
That's right. It's a domino effect. A problem at the beginning can mess things up down the line.
Exactly. It makes me think about another interesting thing in Hoover v. Smith, the conflict between a strict legal interpretation and intent. The court went with a very literal meaning of the law, saying those specific magic words were needed for survivorship. But you could argue that they ignored what the people involved actually wanted.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. It brings up that classic question, should we focus on the exact words of the law or try to figure out what the parties were really trying to do?
Right. The deed clearly stated, and not as tenants in common, but the court still said it didn't create survivorship rights because it didn't have the specific phrases. Did they actually follow the spirit of the original deed, or were they just being super technical?
It's a valid question, and it highlights a fundamental debate in legal interpretation. Is it more important to apply the law consistently and predictably, even if it sometimes leads to results that seem to go against the original intent? Or should we focus on what the parties actually meant, even if it means losing some clarity and predictability? These are questions legal scholars have been wrestling with forever.
It seems like there's no easy answer. But these questions make property law so interesting. It's not just dry legal stuff. It's about real people, real property, and those messy situations where intent and legal interpretation collide.
Absolutely. Hoover v. Smith isn't just a case about a deed. It's a small example of the big, complicated questions we face in the legal system. It challenges us to think hard about how we interpret and use the law and what the consequences might be for individuals and society.
This whole discussion has been really thought-provoking. I could see so many ways this case could apply to different parts of property law and legal practice in general.
It really is a treasure trove of insights, and it reminds us that legal knowledge is always changing. What might have been okay decades ago might not be good enough today.
That's a great point. It shows how important it is to stay informed and adapt our practices to keep up with the current legal landscape.
Exactly. The law is alive. It's constantly evolving to meet the needs of society. As legal professionals, we have to keep up with those changes to give our clients the best and most up-to-date advice.
And we're back. We've been talking about Hoover v. Smith, this case that really shows how important clear legal language is, especially when it comes to property. We're dealing with a deed from 1928, but the court battle didn't happen until 1994. That's a long time. Do you think that time difference had any effect on the court's decision?
Yeah, it definitely makes things more complicated. Legal concepts and how we interpret them, they change over time. What was normal back in 1928 might be seen totally differently decades later.
So you're saying it's possible that the language in that 1928 deed, even though it didn't explicitly say right of survivorship was still enough to create a joint tenancy with those rights back then.
It could be, yeah. Legal language changes, just like everything else. The court in 1994, they had to follow the laws and understanding of their time, and that might have been different from how things were viewed in 1928.
This case really makes you think about how important it is to stay updated on legal stuff.
Yeah.
It's like the law is always moving.
Absolutely. It's constantly adapting to society. We, as legal professionals, we've got to stay on top of those changes and make sure our practice is current.
Okay, before we finish this deep dive, let's leave our listener with something to think about. The court, in Hoover v. Smith, they were really strict about the law, insisting on those specific phrases for survivorship rights. Could this be seen as putting technicalities ahead of what the original deed actually intended? And what could that mean for future property disputes?
That's a really great question to consider. It highlights that constant challenge in legal interpretation, trying to be true to the exact words of the law while also honoring the spirit and intent behind it. It's a question that lawyers and scholars will probably debate forever.
It's a lot to think about, isn't it? Hoover v. Smith. On the surface, it seems like a straightforward case about a deed, but it opens up all these complex legal and philosophical questions that are still relevant today.
For sure. It reminds us that property law, and law in general, is full of these little details and complexities. It's not just about memorizing rules, it's about understanding the ideas behind them and using them carefully in every unique situation.
Well, I think we've really gotten into the depths of Hoover v. Smith today. It's a case that's both fascinating and a warning, reminding us of the power of words and how important it is to stay sharp in our practice.
It's been great exploring this case with you. It's always fun to look at these legal puzzles and see what we can learn from them.
And to our listener, I hope this deep dive has given you some valuable insights as you put together your presentation on property law disputes. Sometimes, you know, the most interesting stories are hiding in the fine print.
Well said. And to everyone listening, remember, the law is always changing. Stay informed, stay engaged, and never stop questioning.
Great advice. Thanks for joining us for another deep dive into the world of property law. Until next time, keep those legal minds sharp.